Vince is revenging his act of bravado right now. RKO! RKO! Miz! Miz! Crushing finale! The Miz! Here's the cover! Under the leg! He did it! He did it! Miz is champion!
I cannot believe it!
Champion!
The winner of this match!
He's defeated Randy Orton, the Miz, on top of the world.
That was last night, Monday Night Raw in Orlando. The Miz cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase on an injured Randy Orton and becoming the new WWE champion. This is Sound Off 135, special weekday edition here on SCScoops.com. I am the Solo Monster, or some people have started calling me the Mono Monster. It is Tuesday, November 23rd, 2010, and just to give everybody an update, if you do not follow along on Twitter or Facebook, the reason there was no podcast this past weekend is because I'm not quite sure what's going on. I'm not quite sure if I got sick again, or if I simply was misdiagnosed the first time, and now it's kind of blown up into something else. That's what I tend to believe here, but not doing too well. You might be able to hear it in my voice, so let me just first and foremost apologize if I do not sound all that great. That would be the reason why. I'm battling a pretty nasty case of what they believe to be mono right now, which I've never had before. I think, actually, you can only get it once, but lucky me, it seems like I've got it. And, of course, naturally, the one thing that is really killing me more than anything else is my throat. I'm all hopped up on medication right now. CM Punk would be very disappointed with me if he knew what was going on. So the pain right now has subsided a little bit, I'm sure, in the next couple of hours, especially after speaking for the next hour. It's going to come back with a vengeance. But my, you know, I don't know if it's the glands or the tonsils in the back of my throat, they feel like golf balls right now. Just to take a swallow is the worst pain you've ever felt in your entire life. It is not pretty stuff, so just bear with me here. But I was determined with everything that's been going on to do a show, so we'll go on here as long as we can, and then when I can't go anymore, we'll stop. I want to give some thoughts on a lot of different things. Old School Raw from last week, I know it's kind of old news now, but I want to talk about that. There were a bunch of WWE cuts on what has come to be known as Black Friday last week. Obviously, we had a pay-per-view this past weekend, and the big news came on Raw last night. So, first things first, let's talk some Survivor Series. And I just want to give a quick plug for the editorial that I posted last week. I'm sure many of you have seen it on the SC Scoops main page. It's up in the main box. It should still be the top story. If not, it's up there somewhere. It's the Survivor Series Pick One and Be Done editorial. It's not exactly a listing of the best Survivor Series matches ever. I know that's kind of what the headline says. It's not what it's meant to be. Basically, I went back and selected one match from each of the last 23 Survivor Series pay-per-views, not including the one from this past weekend. And in many cases, they were the best match on the show. In some cases, they were just unique for some other reason. It's my own personal list. I know a lot of you thought it was entertaining, and you can leave comments underneath the article. So if you haven't already read that, check it out. I think it's an interesting read for those of you who are into kind of old school history and things like that. And it's a fun look back on what was once one of WWE's bigger pay-per-views of the year. And I put some notes at the end of the editorial, because after all, that is what it is. It is an editorial. It is my thoughts. That Survivor Series does not mean nearly as much as it once did. And I'm not just talking about the tradition of the elimination matches. I'm just talking about what the event itself once meant compared to what it is now. And Survivor Series from this past weekend was a great example of that. Now, feedback to that show was kind of mixed based on reactions that I got in my inbox and that I saw on various wrestling websites. All I know is this. I have seen the Survivor Series. I did not watch it live. I slept through the entire thing in a drug-induced state. But subsequently, I did watch the pay-per-view. And My thoughts on it are basically very simple. If I had spent $44.95 of my money, or $54.95 for the HD feed, on that pay-per-view, I personally would have come away very, very disappointed, especially in light of what happened the next night on Raw. If you are one of the people who orders every WWE show, like I used to once upon a time when I was younger, if you thought you got your money's worth, or your parents' money's worth, as it were, from Survivor Series, then congratulations. I'm happy for you. I'm just speaking for myself here when I say that if I had spent that much money on that pay-per-view, I would have expected more out of it than what I got. And again, when you look to Raw the next night, and they've done this before. I mean, it's not as though they have not had pay-per-view rematches the following night. But given the significance of what happened last night, I would be even more upset. You know, Survivor Series started with what I thought was a really fun match. No surprise there, involving Daniel Bryan defending the U.S. title against Ted DiBiase. Hot way to start the pay-per-view. And it all pretty much went downhill from there. There was a nice moment with Beth Phoenix making her comeback after Natalya already won the women's title in what was pretty much a nothing match against Michelle McCool. So that was a nice moment, but the match itself was just kind of there. The Survivor Series elimination match, I'm always a sucker for those. It seemed to get a pretty good reaction from the crowd, maybe more than any other match on the show. But again, it was just kind of there. Nothing overly special happened. Actually, what shocked the hell out of me was the fact that Alberto Del Rio was knocked out of the match, literally knocked out of the match, as early as he was, and he never came back out. So that kind of surprised me. Not sure why Big Show has to go over, but you know, nothing of any other great note happened on that show. Kane and Edge had what I thought was a bad match. Wade Barrett and Randy Orton had a match that did not blow me away. And, you know, WWE opted to go the easy way out. You know, it was a very basic match with a very basic finish. You know, Cena did what he said he was going to do. There were no swerves. There were no surprises. And there doesn't have to be all the time. But in this case, I expected that there was going to be some sort of twist. Not necessarily a John Cena heel turn. That did not disappoint me. But I expected more. I was a little befuddled when I saw John Cena hug Michael Cole, for example, after the match and not Jerry Lawler. I don't know, maybe I'm reading a little too much into that, but that was Survivor Series, and not a particularly good show, in my opinion. So then you move over to Raw last night, which was a much more noteworthy show, in my opinion, than the pay-per-view the night before, which should never be the case, but it was. Obviously, the big news is that The Miz cashed in his Money in the Bank briefcase. Randy Orton had come out for a Survivor Series rematch with Wade Barrett. And as Orton was coming to the ring, he was attacked by the Nexus. They went after his knee. Orton was injured. The match went on anyway. John Cena, who of course had counted the fall on Wade Barrett the night before and presumably was fired, even though Wade Barrett didn't actually do the firing like he said he would, Cena was supposed to be gone from WWE. He had actually come out earlier in the show, cut this very impassioned promo that I'll get to in a second, and left the building, or so we thought. Of course, Cena did come back, interfered in the match, beat up Wade Barrett, got chased away by the Nexus. Randy Orton ended up hitting the RKO, winning the match, and at that point I knew exactly what was going to happen. The fact that Orton was hurt and was nursing a knee injury, and that we had at least 5 minutes left on the air, I knew exactly what was going to happen, but it didn't take away from the enjoyment of it at all. I thought it was very well done. The Miz comes out, cashes in his briefcase, they have a little two-minute match, and he wins clean with his finishing move, the skull-crushing finale, which is a great way to put the move over. 1-2-3, and The Miz is your new WWE champion. So congrats go to The Miz. I mean, here's a guy who has truly come full circle in his wrestling career. Here's a guy who grew up a legitimate wrestling fan. Anybody that knows his background from reality TV, you know, when he was playing the Miz character on The Real World, I mean, here's a guy who grew up a tried and true WWE fan. He had the action figures. He followed the product like you and me, obnoxious as he may be. A real wrestling fan, which I can appreciate. And when he came over to WWE, he was not very good. You know, he's always had the gift of gab. Obviously, he's a much better talker now in terms of wrestling promos than he was when he first came into the business, although he was always a good talker. But as a wrestler, he's not exactly a modern-day Bret the Hitman Hart, but he has come a long way. He has improved in a lot of different facets. You know, you all know the story. When he came into the company, people looked at him as a joke. He was not treated very well backstage by some of the veterans. It took a long time for him to overcome that reality star stigma. Even his ring attire. You know, there was a point last year where The Miz kind of took it upon himself to come out in actual wrestling trunks instead of those shitty pants that he used to wear. He kind of redid himself, gave himself a makeover. He came up with a new catchphrase that people started chanting, which is always a good way to get into the good graces of management when you can get the crowd behind you like that and sell some merchandise. But he's done all the right things. The last 6 months or so, more than at any other point in his career, he's been a team player, he's been on the road, he's doing promotional appearances. In my opinion, a real turning point for him was prior to SummerSlam, when he was one of the WWE guys on the George Lopez show. They had a WWE week, you may recall. They had Dolph Ziggler singing a song one night. Well, one night they had The Miz come out and do his karaoke rendition of Jump Around, which is a classic song. And I thought he literally brought the house down. I mean, he did a hell of a job. And it's stuff like that that makes WWE, it's a good way to get people's attention. You know, he's a very good guy to put out there as a spokesman for the company. And it's no surprise to me that they put the title on him. And I like the way that they did it. You know, should they have saved it for a pay-per-view? Should they have saved it for WrestleMania? Should they have done it at Survivor Series? I say no. You know, you can always do something better. Nothing's ever perfect. In my opinion, the way they did it last night was great, though. I don't know that I would change anything about that. The crowd was on their feet. They knew what was going on. CM Punk pointed out on commentary at one point that everybody in Orlando was on their feet. People got really excited. They were into it. They were cheering. They were chanting. It was exactly the type of reaction that you would hope for. And now, The Miz is truly a main event player in WWE. It's a fresh face in the main event scene. Obviously, now you would expect that this would build towards a Randy Orton-Miz feud. Perhaps their first big match will come at the TLC pay-per-view in December. They would be absolute fools to take the belt off Miz anytime this year. Miz should at least hold the title through WrestleMania. I've talked about on this show before the potential for a Miz-John Cena WrestleMania main event, although my idea kind of had Miz cashing in at WrestleMania, but doing so in advance, kind of showing some guts and saying that, you know, he wanted to cash in against the champion being John Cena at the time and maybe do some sort of a double turn in that match. Obviously, that's not the direction they went in, but I think Miz has earned himself a spot, and I could see him holding the title through WrestleMania, maybe even beyond. You know, I think he'll do a fine job with it, and I give WWE thumbs up for how they handled it last night. It really felt like something special had just happened on that show, and it's rare that we see a WWE championship change on Raw. I mean, once upon a time, it was, I don't want to say commonplace, but the world title changing hands on free TV was happening on a much more frequent basis. So when stuff like that does happen now in 2010, it feels more special. The only problem, again, with this is that Raw felt more special than Survivor Series. And that should never, ever happen. And when WWE wonders why their pay-per-view buy rates are plummeting, that's one of the things they need to look at in the future. As far as the rest of Raw, the way I look at it, there were three things that jump out at me as being important occurrences last night that I took away from the show. Obviously, one is Miz winning the championship. The other one would be the addition of CM Punk to the Raw announce team. Punk, as I mentioned either last week or the week before, was suffering from an injury. It was believed that he had undergone surgery for a torn tendon in his hip. Actually, it might have been his buttock. He actually did not undergo surgery. He opted to let it heal on its own. And this is an injury that could take a couple of months. He should not be in any jeopardy of missing WrestleMania, but it could be at least 2 or 3 months. And so Punk is one of those guys who doesn't just want to be sitting on the sidelines doing nothing. He actually was able to call a couple of matches, I think, on WWE Superstars last week. They were impressed. Obviously, Punk is a good talker. You don't need me or anybody else to tell you that. So when Michael Cole introduced him last night, I popped huge. I think CM Punk will add quite a bit to the Raw announce team. Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler are obviously, together as a unit, very stale. And the fact that they brought Jim Ross back on that old school Raw, even though Michael Cole almost single-handedly ruined the entire experience, showed how awful the announce teams in WWE are today. Adding somebody like CM Punk, who has that, you know, gift of gab, he's a funny guy. I don't know if, I guess you can call him a color guy, since Jerry Lawler really isn't much of one anymore. Even last night, you know, some of the lines that Punk had, whether, you know, they're all being fed by Vince McMahon or not, is it was just gold. And, you know, Punk is just one of those guys that I personally find very entertaining. And so, you know what, I'm not always the biggest fan of three-man booths, but in this case, I give it a thumbs up. Anything to change from the monotony of King and Cole is fine with me, and CM Punk is awesome. So, I give that a thumbs up as well. And, of course, the other big theme of last night was King of the Ring qualifiers. We have yet another three-hour Raw coming up next week, which isn't even the last of them, because we have the Slammies coming up, I think, in 2 weeks from next week. But they had the first set of King of the Ring qualifiers. I guess the way they're going to work this is we saw four people qualify last night from Monday Night Raw. There will be four who qualify from SmackDown, and that will be your tournament next week. So I'll give a prediction as far as who I think will win, but it's kind of a half-hearted prediction because I'm only really able to go by the Raw guys that have qualified. I don't yet know who will qualify from SmackDown. If I had to pick a guy from SmackDown that I could easily see winning this if he qualifies, I would have to go with Alberto Del Rio. I believe the match with him and Big Show on Friday night is going to be a King of the Ring qualifier. I'm not 100% sure about that. I could see Del Rio taking this very easily, but at least from the Raw side, we've had Sheamus, Daniel Bryan, Ezekiel Jackson, and John Morrison qualify. And of that bunch, I would probably have to go with Sheamus. I think King Sheamus has a nice ring to it. And obviously, Triple H's first feud back, whenever he does finally come back to TV, is going to be with Sheamus. I could see a King of Kings against King Sheamus feud. You know, so again, I don't know who will qualify from SmackDown, but my pick there would be Del Rio. My pick overall at this point, got to go with Sheamus. By the way, speaking of John Morrison, this is one of the things I forgot to mention before about The Miz, which just makes it all the more impressive to see how far he has risen in a relatively short period of time. You know, when Miz and Morrison were a tag team, and I hate when people do this, but invariably it happens with many tag teams. The comparison is made to Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. And who will be the Shawn Michaels of the team and who will be the Marty Jannetty of the team? Which is kind of a slap in the face to Marty Jannetty. Now, granted, he brought a lot of that on himself. You know, Jannetty could have been a bigger star than he was. Not a world champion, in my opinion, but Marty had his own problems with partying and drinking and drugs, and he kind of made his own bed. But Marty was every bit as talented as Shawn Michaels when they were together as a tag team. You know, even when Marty came back for that cup of coffee in 2005, when they were building up the Shawn Michaels-Kurt Angle feud, and there was a match on SmackDown between Kurt Angle and Marty Jannetty, and yes, I understand it's Kurt Angle who can carry a mop to a good match, but Marty held his own. That was a very impressive match. So it's kind of a shame to see that Marty didn't ever, you know, he never really had a chance to realize his full potential, but that's beside the point. The point is, everyone loves to make that comparison. Even on TV, they will sometimes make that comparison, bringing up the Shawn Michaels-Marty Jannetty deal as far as who becomes a big star and who ends up floundering and going nowhere. And I think most people, and I won't say everybody, but most people, myself included, were of the belief that John Morrison was going to be, quote-unquote, the Shawn Michaels of the team. And all that really means is Morrison would be given the opportunity to go further, quicker, and potentially be a world champion, whereas Miz would likely follow a different, less successful path. And obviously, it didn't work out that way. And that surprises me, because John Morrison always physically fit the mold better as far as somebody that you would think WWE would want to push. You know, he's got a better physique than The Miz does. He can do fancier moves than The Miz does. They talk about his parkour crap every week, which is annoying. As though they just realized parkour is some new thing, even though it's been around for many, many years. Which just makes them look even more out of touch with their own product. But that's beside the point. All the more impressive that The Miz became a world champion, a bona fide main eventer, before John Morrison. Now, this does not mean that Morrison will not one day become a world champion. And Morrison has been getting a nice push lately. You know, he beat Sheamus, a former world champion, clean at the Survivor Series, which I'm not sure why. My guess would be that perhaps they will rematch in one of the King of the Ring rounds next week, and Sheamus will beat Morrison and get his win back. But I think Morrison can and will one day be a world champion on one of the two brands. But The Miz beat him to it, and I never would have expected that to happen. So I just wanted to put that out there, that I, you know, I was one of those people who would have probably laughed in your face if you would have told me that when they broke up, that Miz would become a world champion and become a main event player before John Morrison would, because just based on the way WWE pushes certain people, I never would have expected it. So that was a pleasant surprise. Now let me just make some comments here about John Cena's promo from last night. Again, John Cena is supposedly fired from WWE. And, you know, he comes out, and the first thing is he is smiling. And he's all happy and full of energy. He makes basically your typical everyday John Cena entrance, even though he's coming out to do essentially a farewell speech. This is a decision that has just ripped him apart inside for weeks upon weeks upon weeks. He is fired from what he loves to do, the only thing he's ever known. And here comes John Cena. Now, granted, I'm sure he is at peace with his decision, but no fucking way John Cena should be coming out laughing and smiling and saluting and running to the ring and posing and doing all the usual shit that he does. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So that pissed me off, and that you know, got me thinking, okay, this is going to be one of those comedy typical John Cena bullshit promos. And I'm happy to say that it's kind of started out that way, but it got better. You know, he had a smile on his face, he had a smirk on his face, and all I kept thinking was, what are you so happy about? I understand that you're at peace with your decision, but this is not the time for one of your typical John Cena cutesy promos, which is exactly what it was when it first started. And as it went along, Cena started to get a little more personal. You know, we talked about his family missing the birth of his niece because he's on the road all the time, which is a shoot. John Cena is on the road more than he sees his own home. Talking about his mom's birthday and how it's coming up, I think, next week, and he's going to give her the greatest gift of all because he'll actually be there to celebrate with her. And it looked like he was getting a little glassy-eyed. And at that point, I came around, and I said, you know what? This is exactly the type of promo that this should be. This is what it should have been from the beginning. So, you know, I came around on it. He sold me. And I thought Cena did what turned into one heck of a promo. And obviously, the question now is, how are they going to handle this? Are they going to keep him off TV for an extended period of time and then bring him back? Or are they just going to essentially ignore the stipulation and try to figure out a way to get him back on TV in a week or two? You know, if I'm WWE, first of all, this is not the direction I would have gone in. I mean, I probably would have turned Cena heel a long time ago. But besides that, I would have kept the storyline going a little bit longer. I wouldn't have ended it so prematurely. But given the direction that they went in, if it were up to me, I would probably keep Cena off TV until Royal Rumble and either have him as an announced entrant to try to drum up some buys, or if it's not going to make a difference one way or the other, put him in there as a surprise entry, kind of like what they did 3 years ago at Madison Square Garden. But I would keep him out for an extended period of time and then bring him back, you know, obviously well before WrestleMania. Now, given what happened on Raw last night, when Cena came back out at the end of the show and essentially cost Wade Barrett the WWE Championship, I see them going one of two ways. First of all, I could easily see Wade Barrett, an enraged Wade Barrett, requesting that the general manager, or perhaps the chairman himself, Mr. McMahon, reinstate John Cena so that Wade Barrett can have a match with him. at the next pay-per-view and get his revenge, either at TLC, perhaps at the Royal Rumble show in January. But basically, Barrett wants Cena back and asks that he is reinstated. Or they can keep this going for a couple of weeks where Cena is showing up at the shows even though he's no longer under contract and he's just basically fucking with Nexus until they reach their breaking point and request that Cena be reinstated. I mean, basically, that's the only solution to this. Whether it happens next week or 4 weeks from now, Wade Barrett is going to want John Cena back in WWE so he can get his revenge, and that's how I see the storyline going. So, you know, we'll see how they execute it, but to me, it's kind of stupid. You know, you build up this big stipulation, which we all know stipulations don't mean anything. The only way to rehab that is to go with stipulations that you can actually adhere to, and John Cena being fired is not anything they were ever going to be able to adhere to. So, you know, here we go again with the stipulation that nobody could possibly believe, and now you're not giving them a reason to believe it at all in the future anyway. So, Cena is probably going to be on TV every week until he gets reinstated, or he'll be off for a couple of weeks and they'll bring him back anyway for a match with Barrett. You know, whatever. I mean, this whole stuff with R-Truth is another story arc that I'm not quite sure if they're going anywhere with it or not. It seemed to me that it was leading to some sort of turn, if not by Cena, then perhaps by R-Truth. You know, maybe R-Truth has some sort of connection with Nexus. You know, if they don't go anywhere with that, then that's kind of pointless too, unless they're just using the R-Truth character, or we're using it, I should say, just to kind of stir the pot leading up to the pay-per-view, which I guess is possible, but to me it's kind of pointless. Unless you're going somewhere with this, why bother in the first place? So I'm still waiting for there to be some sort of resolution with you know, that whole R-Truth thing as well. You know, if I'm John Cena, I'm pissed off at him. I want an apology. You know, you call yourself my friend, and you wouldn't put your faith in me and believe in me that I was going to do the right thing. Like, just do something with it. So that's still a loose end that they have to tie up. Excuse me for a second. My throat's a little dry. All right. Where was I? Right, so that's pretty much the extent of my thoughts on Raw from last night. One thing I did not want to miss out on commenting on was the old school Raw from last Monday in Hershey, Pennsylvania, which will easily go down as my favorite Raw of 2010. This was a great show. In terms of promoting the Survivor Series pay-per-view, not so great at all, in fact, until the very end. So even at the end of the show, albeit it was one segment, but they still did more in that one segment last week to sell you on buying the pay-per-view than anything else they had done up until that point. So to me, old school Raw was not only fun and entertaining on its own, but at the very end they threw something out there that nobody was expecting. They hit it out of the ballpark, and more specifically, Rowdy Piper hit it out of the ballpark. Now, with Piper, you never know what you're going to get. We've had seemingly inebriated Roddy Piper, who is almost, you know, impossible to understand sometimes, albeit entertaining. And then we'll have Roddy Piper like we had him last week, where he can come out, and whether he's shouting or whether he's talking in the lowest possible voice, he can have you in the palm of his hand, hanging on every single word that comes out of his mouth. He can sell ice to an Eskimo. And that's exactly what he did last week. We may as well start with that. I mean, the very end of the show was Piper's Pit. It was supposed to be John Cena and Randy Orton to talk about the match at Survivor Series with Wade Barrett. And Piper comes out and he talks about, you know, back in his day, it was all about being a man and, you know, basically manning up and doing the right thing. And he invites John Cena to come out. And then Piper gets very serious and his voice kind of lowers. And he talks to John Cena about the many superstars and, in some cases, Hall of Famers that have come through the curtain in WWE. Names that we all would recognize, including Piper himself, Ricky Steamboat. I think he might have mentioned Ravishing Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. Men who were legends, perhaps were world champions elsewhere, but were never WWE champion. Million Dollar Man as well. And so for John Cena to essentially hand somebody like Wade Barrett, who I believe Piper called an SOB, the WWE Championship without deserving it, would essentially be spitting in the face of all of those legends, including himself. And Piper went up to John Cena, stared him right in the eye, and said, "John Cena, don't you spit in my face." And in my opinion, that line right, that was the money line of the promo. Now, I read in newsletters and whatnot after the fact that all of the current roster in the back was just, they were huddled around at least one monitor, if not a series of monitors, again, hanging on Piper's every word in awe of this man's promo. Wade Barrett came out. He held up his end of the bargain. Randy Orton eventually came out, and Orton is not the most exciting promo person in the world, so he almost ruined the entire segment. But I thought that was great, great, great stuff. And that's the sort of promo work that we are missing from today's product. They don't have anybody of the current generation on the roster. I don't want to say who's capable of cutting a promo like that, because anybody is capable. I shouldn't say anybody, but there's a lot of guys on that roster, if they were taught a certain way, if they came up in the old school, if they were taught how to do a promo the correct way, who could do a promo like that? But that's just not the way they teach people down in FCW. So that's a shame, but Piper did a hell of a job. And I think Piper on his own probably sold some buys for Survivor Series. I still don't think the pay-per-view is going to do all that great. But in my opinion, I don't see how you could not have some people who watched that show beforehand and said, "You know what, I'm not exactly sold on this pay-per-view," and then not watch Piper's promo and think, "Holy shit, I have to order the show to see what happens." As far as the rest of old school Raw, what was not to like? I mean, from the intro with the old WWF block letter logo to the old school Monday Night Raw montage intro, which I think they should use every week, quite frankly. I was very surprised to hear the name Mel Phillips used on a WWE show in 2010. At the beginning, when Michael Cole first threw it up to the ring announcer, Justin Roberts, he mentioned the name Mel Phillips. For those of you who are not familiar with the name Mel Phillips, I do not want to get into that right now. All you need to do is Google Mel Phillips and WWF sex scandal, and you'll find out all that you need to know. let's see, what else? I jotted down so many random thoughts as I was watching that show. You know, Mae Young, it was nice to see Mae Young, looking as old and ancient as always, but Mae is always entertaining. Hard to believe it was the same woman that Bubba Ray Dudley once powerbombed off the stage on Raw. I don't think we'll be seeing them doing anything like that anytime soon. Apparently Mae Young is a fan of TNA Impact, based on some of the language that she used. Apparently the people watching in the back, a lot of the current wrestlers, and even Vince McMahon himself, were highly amused by Mae Young using the word sluts and bitches. It's not something we're used to in the modern day WWE, so it was quite noticeable. And, you know, I guess technically that would count as a win for Mae Young. I don't know that you would really call that a match, but whatever. It was good to see Mae. George the Animal Steel randomly walking out during a Kofi Kingston David Otunga match was gold. I was never the biggest, you know, it's not like I'm the biggest George the Animal Steel mark in the world, but my father is. And when I saw that, I knew that when Raw was over, I'd have to show that part to my dad, and he just got a kick out of it. You know, George Steel coming out with the green tongue, looking only slightly older and pretty much looking exactly as he looked 25 years ago, wearing the same black shirt with red trim and eating the turnbuckle. Just great, great stuff, especially for a guy that's 73 years old. And George Steele, only a matter of weeks ago, I believe, was at an independent wrestling show. Excuse me. And thank God he was not seriously injured, but he took a bump that he did not expect to take. I saw the video on YouTube. If you type in George Steele moonsault, I think, on YouTube, it should come right up. There was a match going on. There was a wrestler on the outside. And George the Animal Steele was there, and he was kind of punching the wrestler. He had his back turned. The other wrestler in the match jumped up to the top rope to do a moonsault to the outside of the ring onto the wrestler. But George Steele was in the way and did not see the guy doing a moonsault. So the guy essentially landed right on George's head, knocked him down. It looked bad. It looked really, really bad. But thankfully, he did not suffer any serious injuries, and he was right back at it, you know, eating turnbuckles on Raw. So good for George. Yeah, it was good to see Slick. I'm a huge fan of Jive Soul Roll, one of the more underrated songs, theme songs in WWE history. So seeing him is always a treat. Me and Gene Okerlund's updates were great. It was a shame that they did not use those update segments to do some sort of pay-per-view report for the Survivor Series. They were just some quick promos to advertise their old school line of merchandise, which I think I first talked about on the Sound Off a couple of weeks ago. We had, you know, the return of some of those old school inset promos, which, again, some of these things they've brought back in recent years. They were doing inset promos, I think, on ECW on Sci-Fi for a while. Again, these are the promos that they did more so on the syndicated shows in the 80s, where in the middle of a match, they would have the box appear with a little interview that would usually go no more than, you know, 10 or 20 seconds. Same thing with the interview platform in the back of the arena. They brought that back very, very briefly. In fact, it might have only been for 1 week on Raw back in 2006. And then they just did away with it again. And in my opinion, especially because you don't have to worry about having the announcers stationed back there anymore like they used to be, I don't see why you can't bring that back. You know, one of the things that struck me in watching old school Raw, as much as I enjoyed it, I understand that you can't do that every week. I get that. Although I do think they should do this at least once a year and make it an annual thing. But I watched this show and came up with no less than 3 different things that WWE could borrow from this show and can apply to the current product each and every week. And those are the first 3 things that came into my head. You know, you have the interview platform in the back of the arena. Doesn't have to be me and Gene Okerlund doing the interviews, but not all interviews have to be in the middle of a ring, you know, or on stage. There should be a separate area like that where people can do stand-up interviews. The other thing are the update segments. Now, the update segments, you may remember if you're an old-school fan, were not just... Actually, they were completely separate from the... if you had Survivor Series, for example, coming up this weekend, they would call it the Survivor Series Report. And it would be Mean Gene Okerlund or Sean Mooney or Gorilla Monsoon or Todd Pettengill or whoever it was in studio or in the truck doing their own separate segment hyping up that particular pay-per-view instead of just having Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler sit at ringside and do it like they always do. I think a return to having segments like that would be great. It puts more of an emphasis on whatever event is coming up. And the actual update segments were not so much pay-per-view previews. God, I'm dying over here. If there was a specific storyline going on Raw, for example, when Sheamus and Daniel Bryan... Sheamus and Santino. When Santino beat Sheamus, they had a little program going there for a couple of weeks. An update segment from back in the day 20 years ago, if you took the Sheamus-Santino stuff, would essentially be Gene Okerlund in studio or in the truck with a little graphic next to his head giving a quick update on this particular storyline involving Sheamus and Santino. It would give highlights from whatever the most recent development in that storyline was, and they would perhaps go to some sort of pre-recorded backstage interview with Sheamus and or Santino. All that really does, what makes that effective, is it puts greater emphasis on alerting people as to what the key storylines are on that brand. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In fact, you should put more emphasis on that. TNA does a far worse job in terms of showing you something and then cutting away real quick, you know, like to the back. And they don't let it sink in. They don't, you know, put any sort of emphasis on it. They just do it and that's it. Move on to the next segment. WWE does that too, but TNA does it worse. I think both companies would benefit from having some sort of segment like that. You don't have to call it update. Call it whatever the fuck you want. But I think the concept, you know, to think that there's no concepts from 20 years ago because it's so long ago that would work in the modern day, that's bullshit. I saw no less than 3, maybe 5 different things 2 weeks ago on Raw that could easily work in 2010. I loved hearing Lord Alfred Hayes' voice for the promotional consideration paid for by the following. I love that, even though the guy died like 5 years ago. I was surprised that there was no Bret Hart on the show. I guess we've seen enough of Bret Hart in 2010 that he didn't have to be. Or perhaps they don't want Bret Hart to be associated with old school, since they kind of... I mean, after all, they were using Bret Hart in the main event of SummerSlam. you know, Vince McMahon would love for everybody to look at Jim Ross as being old school and nothing more. But Bret Hart, I guess perhaps that was the reason why they didn't want him on the show. They didn't want to lump him in there with all the other old guys. It was great to hear Jim Ross back on commentary. Of course, Vince McMahon just has to fuck with JR no matter what. But you know what? I told myself then, and even now looking back, I'm not going to get angry about that. Because Vince McMahon was man enough to invite Jim Ross onto the show in the first place, and Jim Ross got to leave with his head held high. You know, he called a match with Jerry Lawler. He enjoyed the experience. He got to slap Michael Cole with his hat around a little bit at the end. And, you know, even at the end of the show when they did the last run-through of all the legends, kind of like what they do on Broadway at the end of a Broadway show, he got a nice ovation from the crowd. He got to wave goodbye to everybody. If that is the last time we see Jim Ross, and I still don't think it's going to be, but if it is, it's a much nicer way for him to leave than just randomly disappearing off TV one week because he had another bout with Bell's palsy, which is essentially what happened. He never really got to have a formal send-off on TV. So I can't really get angry. I didn't let myself get angry over that segment. I'm going to actually tell you about a segment that got me angry in a second. And you're going to be surprised when I tell you this. It was from last week's TV. I'll get to that in a second. Let's see, from my notes here. Chavo Classic, who of course was the limo driver for Alberto Del Rio on the old school Raw, at the very end of the show when they were doing the run-through of all the legends, I thought it was a classy move on his part to pay homage to Eddie Guerrero and doing what WWE failed to do. You know, Eddie Guerrero passed away 5 years ago that weekend, and which is not to say that WWE has to acknowledge that every year, but it's the five-year anniversary, and you're doing an old-school show. I know Eddie Guerrero was not old-school to the point of, you know, it's not like Eddie was on WWF television in the 1980s, but it would have been an appropriate show. You know, you have a package for Mae Young. Why not do a quick tribute video to Eddie Guerrero and just point out to people that it's been 5 years since his death? I'm not going to beat the company up over it. They didn't have to do it, but it would have been a classy thing for them to do. At least Chavo Classic paid homage to Eddie, so that was nice. It would have been nice to see them use the old school championship belts for one night. You know, they have the old red, white, and blue ring ropes. They have the old banners and ring aprons and the old metal barricades. All of that. I mean, I was just eating all of that stuff up. I loved all of it. Loved hearing Howard Finkel back on ring announcing, the best ring announcer of all time. But it would have been nice to use the old belts. Perhaps they were a little worried that if they did that, people would realize how crappy the new belts look compared to the old ones. We saw the official breakup of the Hart Dynasty, which was just so stupid. I mean, all the teasing after all these weeks just to have Tyson Kidd do a very basic heel turn like that. Sucks to be Tyson Kidd. You know, his first week as a heel on Raw this week, and he jobs clean, I believe, to John Morrison. I think that's who he lost to. It just goes to show you that Tyson Kidd would have benefited from being part of the old school 20 years ago. After a big heel turn like that, he could have at least fought jobbers for a couple of weeks and picked up some wins before he started losing to people. But no such luck in 2010. I think D.H. Smith, Harry Smith, David Hart Smith, whatever the fuck they're calling him, has a better chance of going further. But who knows? This could be another Ms. Morrison situation where, you know, I think Harry Smith has the potential to be a world champion first, and either both guys don't go anywhere, or Tyson Kidd gets over. But Tyson Kidd, the problem with him, he just doesn't have the size that Vince McMahon likes. I mean, Vince McMahon is pushing smaller guys more so now than ever before, but I just don't think Tyson Kidd fits that mold. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't know. If I'm Tyson Kidd, I'm not all that enthusiastic about this new heel turn. Last note here from the old school Raw, just a quick note about the Iron Sheik segment. I mentioned Slick earlier. He came out. He was singing his Jive Soul Brawl song when Santino introduced him during that segment. From what I understand, it wasn't the Iron Sheik's mistake that he started cutting a promo on Hulk Hogan a little too early. You know, you may remember he started talking while Slick was still dancing down to his theme music. Apparently, when they rehearsed the segment that afternoon, the Iron Sheik was supposed to go off on Hulk Hogan before Slick came out, and Santino, who was basically carrying the whole segment, forgot when they went live, and he introduced Slick first before giving Sheik the chance to do his speech. So the Iron Sheik was obviously very confused of what was going on, since he knew that he was supposed to do a promo. So I think Santino apologized to him after the segment was over. All's well that ends well, not a big deal, but I know some people were saying how Iron Sheik was, you know, off his meds, and he was, you know, cutting promos when he shouldn't be cutting them, and it really wasn't his fault. They did eventually cut his mic off, which was kind of funny, but yeah, that wasn't that was actually Santino's fault. Now, I mentioned before there was a match last week, a segment that I got really, really angry at. And I don't expect that many people listening to this show are going to have a fucking clue what I'm talking about. But for those of you who do pay attention to NXT, I watched NXT last week on WWE.com. And there was a match. Now, typically these matches on NXT, especially the Divas version, are not very good at all. But there was a match between AJ and Oksana. This was before Oksana was eliminated. Again, it was pretty much a nothing match. If it went 3 minutes, you know, that sounds about right. Probably went about 3 minutes. There was something about this match. I thought this was, by NXT standards, a very good match. I really did. I mean, there was nothing about it that, like, blew me away or anything like that. But I didn't pick up on any, like, blown spots. You know, they were doing their moves. They were hitting their spots. And the finish of the match was, if I remember correctly, AJ hooked Oksana in some sort of impressive-looking submission. It was almost like this spider-looking... The name of the move escapes me. It was a pretty impressive submission that she caught Oksana, and Oksana gave up, and that was the end of the match. But what really got me upset was Michael Cole was doing his shtick during this match. He was bored, he thought it sucked, he was going on and on and on and on, just being extremely fucking annoying. And it's one thing when you're doing that when a match sucks, like that Maxine-Caitlin match from a couple of weeks ago. And typically his act doesn't bother me, although I do have to say, it's starting to really get on my nerves even on Raw, because I have been waiting very patiently for a payoff to this Michael Cole character, and maybe we're going to get it at some point, but it's been a long time. And if they're not going to pay it off, then why the fuck bother with it in the first place? During this particular match, which I thought was really good and the finish was really good, let us not forget that, again, the point of NXT, and I know that this season is treated like a joke, as it should be, and I don't know if they're I think they are actually bringing back NXT, which makes no sense since they're bringing back Tough Enough. In fact, USA just put a casting call out for Tough Enough. Somebody put a link up to it online. So Tough Enough is definitely coming back. I don't see why you would need both Tough Enough and NXT. That kind of defeats the purpose. But anyway, I did not think it was appropriate for Michael Cole to be pulling that crap during this match, because it was actually pretty good. You know, when you have something that's really good or better than usual, you should call it out. You shouldn't talk over it. You shouldn't bash it. You shouldn't say that it's boring. And I don't know why it set me off. I don't know why anything on this particular show would get me angry. It's not worth it. But it did. It really pissed me off. And not in that way that, like, is good heel heat. It was complete, fuck you, I don't like watching you, I don't want to hear you anymore, get the fuck out of here type of heat, which is never a good thing. So Michael Cole really pissed me off during that match, and I thought those two deserved better. And yeah, so if you didn't see it, and I'm sure most of you didn't, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not remembering correctly. I'm not saying it was a fantastic match or anything like that, but I watched it. Maybe I was expecting the worst, and I was impressed by what I saw. And I just didn't think that Cole's shtick was appropriate at that point. So if you want to check it out, it was last week's episode. It was, I guess that was the November 16th show, AJ and Oksana. So you could check that out. Probably on YouTube. They have the whole show on YouTube. Let's see here. Some of the other big stories from the last several days. I'm sure all of you by now read on SC Scoops about the Alex Riley arrest on DUI. I believe it was last Friday in Tampa. I didn't expect that he would get cut because of it, because other people have been popped down there for DUI, people who were not even involved in any sort of major storyline like Alex Riley is, and they've gotten off before. I think Riley should absolutely be punished. I mean, he was out on Raw the week after and again this week, and I'm not aware of any specific punishment, which is bullshit. Driving drunk is about the stupidest fucking thing you could possibly do. Perhaps there's people listening to this podcast that have done that before, and hopefully they would be smart enough to admit that it's a stupid fucking thing to do. It's one thing to put your own life in jeopardy. Hey, you want to fucking kill yourself, go ahead. But when you put other people's lives at risk like that, and you always hear about the story about the drunk driver who collided with another vehicle, and the drunk driver came out pretty much unscathed, but he wiped out an entire family. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard of stories like that, and it just pisses me off. And just because it's a wrestler and it's a WWE guy, I don't give a shit. It's an irresponsible, stupid thing to be doing. And he's lucky that he didn't hurt himself or anybody else. So do I think the guy should be fired over it? You know what? If it's a first offense, I'm not going to say that he should be fired, but he should be punished. He should be suspended. He should be fined. WWE should send some sort of message. And as best as I can tell, there was no message sent. And I really think that's a shitty example to set. So that's my thoughts on that whole thing. Friday was a bad day in WWE. They cut a whole bunch of people. Pretty much dead weight that they cut. Perhaps the biggest cut of all that I was very upset about was the Swagger Soaring Eagle. Unfortunately, we will not be seeing the Eagle anymore. We had Shad Gaspard of the former Crime Time tag team was released. I never would have expected Shad to be let go before JTG. So that to me was the bigger surprise when it comes to Shad getting released. Luke Gallows of the Straight Edge Society, formerly Festus and the Fake Kane for a brief period of time, was also released. I know CM Punk posted something on his Twitter. He wasn't very happy about that. What surprised me the most was when I found out how young he is. Apparently Luke Gallows is only 26 years old. Younger than me. I don't know why that surprises me, but he just looks older. I would have expected him to at least be in his 30s, so that was kind of surprising to me. Vance Archer, Kaelin Croft, Tiffany, and Jillian Hall were all let go by WWE. I think some of those names were on my own cut list of people I would let go if I were in charge of WWE from back from when I did episode 127 of the Sound Off. I think I also had Great Khali on that list and some other people. You know, sometimes you just have to cut the dead weight. If you're not doing anything with somebody, sometimes it's even in their own best interest to just let them go and let them, you know, work their own dates and do their own thing. You know, WWE has some very talented people under contract that they just don't do shit with. In spite of having two, and once upon a time they had three different brands, you still have cases of very talented people who are stuck with a shitty gimmick or who just aren't being used. You know, look at a guy like a Shelton Benjamin who, you know, perhaps Shelton would love to go back to WWE and would rather just make WWE like money and do nothing, but he's a perfect example of a guy that was being wasted who perhaps being let go was the best thing for him. So in any event, it's never a fun thing to be fired. They were all released last week. In addition to, I believe, a WWE referee, one referee was let go who was being used. He was used on TV, but I think more often he was being used in FCW. And several WWE writers from the creative team, I think up to four, have been cut in recent days, including Chris DeJoseph, who is better known for his on-screen legendary character of Big Dick Johnson. So I guess we won't be seeing him anytime soon. So yeah, a lot of people let go by WWE, doing some spring cleaning in the fall, apparently. And yeah, all wished well, of course, in their future endeavors. Couple of other notes to run through. Vince McMahon, yes, that Vince McMahon, signed a new 3-year contract as the chairman and CEO of WWE. Apparently the deal will earn him a little over $1 million a year, plus of course he has bonuses and stuff that will depend on how the company performs. Funny thing is, you know, as I read this document here, if Vince gets terminated, which of course will never happen, but if he were to be terminated, he would own the intellectual property rights to both the name Vince McMahon and Mr. McMahon, although of course the company could in perpetuity market those names as well. So I just thought that was funny that Vince would, of course, afford himself the opportunity to keep his name, whereas most other people do not have that same luxury. Also interesting to note that a couple of weeks ago when WWE went to England to do TV, which was probably, what, about 2 weeks ago or so, Vince McMahon did not go to the TVs in England. It was the first time that Triple H was in charge with his new role as being Vince's top advisor. And apparently the only thing that was said about that is that things were very different with Vince not there and Triple H in power. And perhaps it was different in a positive manner. That's apparently all that was said. So for all those people out there who automatically assume that Triple H one day taking the reins as the head cheese in WWE is automatically going to be a bad thing, that may not be the case. You know, Triple H can play politics with the best of them, but Triple H also knows, you know, he's also been a wrestler. He's been one of the boys, and Triple H also is a big fan of the old school. So who's to say that a Triple H-run WWE one day wouldn't look more the way that it should? So perhaps this was a sign of things to come. I don't know. But in any event, there you go. One last note here regarding Shawn Michaels, who you may have noticed was making the rounds last week doing promotion with Triple H for the WrestleMania 27 ticket on sale, who automatically assumed that Michaels is coming back. Here's the deal with Shawn Michaels. The creative team has started talking about trying to fit him into WrestleMania next year. Not to wrestle, which he is not going to do, but in another capacity. And I believe this might be the backup plan to whatever it was they had planned with Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, because they're trying to think of something out of the box. They're trying to think of something big, because they really don't have anything for WrestleMania right now that's going to really draw people in. And if they don't come up with something quickly, this is not going to be a show that does very well. You can have great matches on a WrestleMania show, but if you don't have that one angle or that one person or that one thing to hook people in, or if it's whether it's a mainstream celebrity angle or whatever it may be, you know, in today's world competing with UFC pay-per-views, you're just not going to do very well. So as far as Michaels is concerned, the idea has apparently been pitched to have him referee Undertaker's match at WrestleMania. This is, of course, assuming Undertaker will be back in time for the pay-per-view. You know, the belief is that when they did the surgery on his shoulder, is that the shoulder was far more damaged than they had expected. With Michaels, of course, the idea would be teasing that he is so upset with Undertaker still that Undertaker essentially cost him his career, that perhaps he would screw the Undertaker at WrestleMania and end the streak, although in the end, of course, he would not. I don't think anybody would believe that he would. So that would kind of be the story they would be going for. Again, Michaels is not coming back to do a match, certainly not at next year's WrestleMania. Who's to say in 3 years if you can convince Michaels to come back for a match? Never say never, but there's absolutely no way Shawn Michaels would come back to wrestle a year after he, quote-unquote, retired. It's just not going to happen. Referee? Well, you know, that's a different story. I could see him doing that. What's interesting is that Michaels made a comment in an interview he did when he was doing media last week, that if there was one person he would be willing to come back to wrestle if he had a chance to do so against, it would be Sting, which I thought was an interesting comment for him to make. Although, you know, he did go on to reiterate that he, you know, he's wrestled his last match, he's a retired guy now, but I just thought that was an interesting comment for him to make. So, there you go. Those are the major news bits I wanted to get to this week. I think I covered pretty much everything I wanted to. I plugged the Survivor Series editorial that I did earlier on. I want to also just plug the latest SE Scoops mailbag, which there'll probably be a new mailbag going up later this week around Thanksgiving, maybe the day after. But if you haven't checked out last week's mailbag on the main page, go back, scroll down, check it out. There was some good questions there. Always leave your comments and feedback underneath each post on SE Scoops. Don't forget to do that. So let's break into the mailbag here. I'll do as many questions as I can. My throat's kind of getting bad here, so let's see what we can do. I know I'm a little backed up, so I want to get to some of these questions. Sean from California writes in. One of his questions is, I remember a few weeks back, you were talking about Chris Benoit and the WWE Hall of Fame and how he would never be inducted. I'm not writing to make a case for his Hall of Fame entry. I agree that murderers are probably not the best thing for the Hall of Fame. However, your discussion of Benoit got me thinking about ECW. I remember he was slated to face CM Punk for the championship, and I thought it was a foregone conclusion that Benoit would win, thus perhaps lending some main event credibility to the ECW brand and belt. However, that never happened, and instead we were left with John Morrison as our champ, followed by Punk, Chavo, Matt Hardy, etc. And we all know how that went. My question is this. Would it be fair to say that any hopes of ECW becoming a credible third brand in WWE were squashed with the death of Chris Benoit, or was ECW already doomed from the start? Absolutely not. You did not need Chris Benoit to win the ECW title to give life to that brand and to give stability to that brand, or credibility. Would it have given credibility to the belt? Absolutely. But it would be a bullshit excuse if WWE, for example, were to ever use that. WWE could have made ECW a success very easily, and they chose not to. It was doomed from the start because their philosophy of what ECW should be differed so much from what ECW should have been that it was destined to fail, which is exactly what happened. Tony writes into the Sound Off. What is the deal with Iron Sheik and Hulk Hogan? He kept referencing Hogan and Hulkamania on Raw last week, which I found to be hilarious. Well, it's just it's part of Sheik's shtick, basically. For years now, he's gone on and on and on and on and on about Hulk Hogan and how he created Hulkamania and Hogan is gay and he wants to break his back and make him humble and fuck his ass and all this other stuff. I love how Iron Sheik calls other people gay, but he constantly talks about fucking people in the ass. You know, he tells the story, of course, as he said for years now, that Vern Gagne, who of course was the promoter for the AWA, told Sheik that he would pay him something like $100,000 if he broke Hogan's leg in that match at Madison Square Garden in 84 where Hogan won the belt. I don't know that too many credible people actually believe that story. There's never ever been any proof to refute that, nor prove that it's true, so it's just a story that Sheik tells. But whatever, it's entertaining enough. I don't take anything he says very seriously anyway, so. When you're old and senile, you tend to do stuff like that. Edgar from California writes in, I only began listening to The Sound Off recently, and I must say I agree with most of your opinions. Love the show and really respect your take on wrestling. Well, thank you. Question is this. I had a thought a few days ago. Do you feel Vince McMahon never really intended to scrap the Survivor Series at all and feel that this was a sales tactic on his part where he thought that if fans would be so upset that he took the pay-per-view away, they would want it back, therefore generating an excitement over its reinstatement and leading to more pay-per-view buys? Because I feel that Vince folded it pretty quickly only to bring it back to pay-per-view. Seems very odd. What do you think? Vince is smart, but he ain't that smart. First of all, the only people who even knew that Survivor Series was taken away were the stockholders and the people who read wrestling websites and newsletters, which is actually a very, 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 very small percentage of their overall audience. They took the pay-per-view away because Vince said that he thought the concept was obsolete. And I'm not so sure that I disagree with that. If you read my Survivor Series editorial from last week, I make that very point at the very end. You know, looking back, I'm not sure that Vince was wrong to suggest that the Survivor Series name and concept, as it was originally conceived, is now obsolete in 2010. I think what ended up happening was Vince realized, or had people tell him, that Survivor Series did poorly last year, not because the Survivor Series name is totally obsolete, but because we did a shitty job of promoting the main event of last year's pay-per-view with the Midget and Michaels and Triple H and Cena. When your main event is turned into a comedy angle, your pay-per-view is not going to sell that many buys. Whatever it was, Vince came to his senses, or he just couldn't come up with what he wanted to substitute the show with. He couldn't figure out what the new name was going to be. Whatever the reason was, it had nothing to do with a sales tactic. This did not sell one more buy for this show this year. Believe me. This was not some big marketing campaign. They didn't put commercials on TV asking people, you know, to come up with a new name for the Survivor Series or anything like that. So, absolutely not. And if it was a sales tactic, it was about the shittiest one I've ever seen Vince McMahon come up with. Got a letter here from Lupine, MP3J, commenter from our SE Scoops boards. Not long ago, during the video where he appeared to be challenging Brock Lesnar, that would be the Ariel Helwani interview that he is referring to, The Undertaker told the reporter that he would have loved to have had an MMA career, although it's too late for him to start now. Anyone who watches Undertaker's matches can easily see that he is one of, if not the best pure striker in the business. I don't know if it's something you've already addressed, but how successful do you think Undertaker could have been as an MMA fighter? That's an impossible question for me to answer. I wouldn't fancy myself an MMA aficionado, even though I am a fan. I think there's so many variables. I mean, Undertaker has proven himself to be injury-prone as a professional wrestler. So you ask yourself, why is that? Is it because he's a tall guy, you know, who perhaps puts a lot of pressure on his knees and his joints? Is it because he did steroids and performance-enhancing drugs throughout his career? I'm not saying he did. I'm just throwing it out there as a possible theory. Why has Undertaker been so injury-prone? I can't even really say throughout his entire career. It's really been, if you think about it, more so in the last 10 to 12 years. But that could also just be a product of age. You know, Undertaker has gotten progressively older, as we all do. Undertaker now is in his mid to late 40s. You're going to get hurt more often doing what you do if you are the Undertaker. So if Undertaker was going to get injured that often as an MMA fighter, he would have had a very short, unsuccessful career. You know, when did Undertaker become so well-versed in the art of mixed martial arts? Was it something he picked up along the way in the last decade? Was he studying jiu-jitsu when he was very young and just didn't tell anybody? I mean, there's so many different questions to answer. It's just it's impossible to give a straight answer. I think if Undertaker would have trained properly and would have been in peak physical condition when he got into MMA and never would have gotten into pro wrestling, you know, I would think a guy that is 6'9", 6'10", you know, 275 pounds, probably would have done pretty well for himself as a heavyweight. I don't know that he would have been a world championship caliber athlete in the UFC. I think he would have done okay, but it's impossible to know how far he truly would have gone. Luis writes into the Sound Off, Dear Solomonster, when do you think the Attitude Era officially ended? Is it WrestleMania X7, as many have suggested, or could it have been any of these other instances? For example, Survivor Series 2001, which is when WWF defeated the Alliance. Was it the change from WWF to WWE in May of 2002? Was it perhaps when Austin took his ball and went home the following month? Was it Austin's last match at WrestleMania 19? Perhaps it was WrestleMania 20 in Madison Square Garden? When did the Attitude Era end? The Attitude Era ended when Vince McMahon and Steve Austin shook hands at WrestleMania 17. In my opinion, that is when the Attitude Era officially came to an end. And you had a shitload of people flock away from the product. Could the mystery Raw GM eventually be revealed to be Sunny? She could play a heel or a face. No. Final question. Comes from... person writing in for the first time. Ziggy from Belgium writes in, a big fan of the podcast. He says the following. He says it's become a big part of his wrestling week since about episode 110. Here in Belgium, we have absolutely no exposure to wrestling whatsoever. It doesn't air on any TV station, and generally people's knowledge about it here is limited to wrestling. Isn't that fake? Why would anyone watch that? MMA is slowly getting a niche following. As a kid, I used to travel to the U.S. twice a year, and I always enjoyed watching WCW back then. Now, since about a year and a half ago, I found a way to watch it down here, and I've been hooked again since. Let's see here. I've just finished watching the November 18th episode of TNA Reaction, in which Hulk Hogan actually mentions the word kayfabe and says stuff like, "Who cares how many fake belts Team 3D has won?" I was actually shocked by this sort of breaking the fourth wall by the Hulkster, and I wanted to ask you if this is in fact as unprecedented as it appears to me to be. Keep in mind that I missed about 10 years of wrestling. I'm aware that everyone knows it's not actually real, but for him to rip the suspension of disbelief concept the way that he did so blatantly really surprised me. Speaking of fake belts, why the hell can't WWE announcers call them belts instead of championships? Well, I'll take the second question first. That's a Vince McMahon call. Even Michael Cole kind of made fun of it on the old school Raw last week. He said the word belt by accident, and then he quickly corrected himself. It's one of Vince McMahon's just stupid little things that he has in his head where he does not want the announcers or the wrestlers to refer to them as belts or straps. They are to be called championships and titles. It's totally a Vince McMahon call. And obviously he can change his mind anytime he wants to, but he chooses not to. Now, as far as the first question, I did not see that episode of TNA Reaction. I have not. I've been TNA free for the last week or two, especially in my... with my illness, the last thing I need to do is watch TNA and take a turn for the worse. Although I may try to give them a shot on Thanksgiving, we'll see. But as far as Reaction is concerned, which typically is a good show and is one of the few things TNA does that is actually probably worth watching, Hogan is full of shit. And I consider myself a Hulk Hogan fan. But Hogan is just full of shit. And if... you weren't aware of that before. You are now. You know, for Hulk Hogan, of all people, to go on television and make a comment to the effect of, "Who cares how many fake belts you've won?" This coming from a man who won 12 world championships in his career, each one seemingly more important than the next, each time not wanting to give that championship up, belt up, not wanting to give up his spot. It was so important for him to have people around that could job to him and lose to him all the time so he can win more titles and more fake belts. It just comes off as extremely hypocritical to me. excuse me. It's not the first time that the so-called fourth wall has been broken down, but I think it might be the first time any wrestler or legend on the level of a Hulk Hogan has done so on television. It may well be. I can't remember another legend from the past or somebody like a Stone Cold Steve Austin or a Triple H or The Rock going on a current modern-day wrestling program and saying the sort of things that Hogan said on that particular show, even though it is part of a storyline. They're trying to make the show feel more real. It's a stupid fucking thing for him to do. I mean, especially if you're... And clearly he's talking about Team 3D... Especially because on that same show, you know, there's like a promo on Impact where they're talking about, you know, all the titles they won, and you're supposed to be taking that storyline seriously, and yet if you watch Reaction, here's Hulk Hogan making fun of it as though it doesn't mean jack shit. I mean, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. It's what they call a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't want it to mean anything, it won't. I mean, you're only really harming your own product and your own storyline by doing that, so... Not the first time that people have broke kayfabe and said stupid shit on TV or done work shoot interviews, what they call work shoots. But the first time I can remember somebody like on the level of a Hulk Hogan doing so in a setting like this. And in my opinion, it was a pretty fucking stupid thing for him to do. So, I'm going to wrap up the mailbag here. That's it. I'm done. My throat can take no more. Again, I apologize. I know for a fact that I don't sound as good as I usually do, but hopefully I sounded good enough. did the best I could. You can send in feedback to thesolemonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/solemonster for any and all updates during my illness here. Facebook.com/thesolemonster. I put a picture up there of the evil-looking girl from Raw last night. That was the money shot of the entire show when Miz won the championship. And they got this shot of this little girl in the audience who looked like, you know, the Undertaker's daughter. with this extremely upset, just extremely pissed off look on her face. I don't know. You know, kudos to the WWE production crew. I mean, they have numerous cameras. You know, if you've ever seen the inside of the WWE production truck, they've got numerous cameras all over the arena, all over the crowd at any given moment. So they monitor these things. But how they managed to find that one little girl at just the right moment, just bravo. I say bravo to those people. So if you want to check that picture out and leave a comment, you can find it on my Facebook. I would hope to do another sound off in its usual slot this weekend. I really don't know what's going to be honest with you. I was told that this, you know, this virus could be something that lasts several weeks, which if that's the case, just shoot me. Or it could be something that I'm over within a week or two, you know, or it could last longer. It just depends on how I feel and how my voice sounds. If I feel better but my voice sounds like shit, that's not usually the best recipe to do a podcast. So we're literally going to take this one day at a time. I would hope to do episode 136 this weekend, but it's possible it ain't going to happen. So just keep following me on Twitter and Facebook. I'll give you guys updates there and let you know what's going on. And you can keep sending in your feedback for the mailbag for both this show and the SE Scoops mailbag. Typing is not a problem, so I would expect that there will be a mailbag up, as usual, on the website later this week. To all of you who are going to be celebrating Thanksgiving this week, happy Thanksgiving. Have a safe and happy Thanksgiving. And, you know, corny as it may sound, just remember to be thankful for everything that you do have. I know I, for one, once I get over this stupid virus, I'm going to be very thankful for feeling healthy again. You really don't realize what you got till you don't have it anymore. And this pain that I have when I swallow with my throat, I just want to go back to the way things were before, and I would be a very, very happy Solemonster. So, enjoy Turkey Day with loved ones, and we'll see you back here next time on SEScoops.com. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemonster sounds off on SEScoops.com.